Rick's out, and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Andy and Sunday have crashed. They've gone into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you were speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there, I'm Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds off the back of a very, very, very eventful Hungarian Grand Prix. We kind of hoped for a bit of rain. We hoped for a bit of drama. We got rain. We got drama. We got everything we needed. Almost, and I said this on Twitter, we almost got too much drama caused by the rain. It was an incredible start. There's so many things. I don't even know where to start on that Grand Prix. So many things that I watched and thought, what's happening here? What am I watching? What's going down here? But yeah, an incredible race.
Yeah, normally the Hungarian Grand Prix is one that I get excited about. And then I think, I don't know why I do get excited about it, because it's normally the biggest procession on the Formula One calendar, apart from maybe Monaco. It's just not easy to overtake there. But what that meant was that when things started going wrong and drivers were out of order, the fact that you can't overtake at the Hungary Grand Prix makes it so much more interesting. It means we could get results like we did on Sunday, which is just fantastic. But yeah, the rain coming down was great. Already it was starting, though. If you looked at some of the free practice sessions, there was unsafe releases, there were people making errors, Mick Schumacher put it into the wall again for the Haas team. So it was already building up to be a dramatic race weekend anyway. And then half an hour before the start of the race, of course, the rain came down and they all started on intermediates.
And one of the weirdest things I've witnessed in a long, long time in Formula One was Hamilton starting alone on the grid, which just bizarre that every single car came in apart from Hamilton, and he sat out there, started the race on his own. Everybody else followed out on different tyres. They immediately realised they'd made a mistake. He come in and changed his tyres. Then he's at the back again. It was very reminiscent of that race in America. I think it was at Indy, wasn't it, when they had like the six teams that started, three teams, and all the, I think it was the Michelin teams came in, didn't they? And the Bridgestone started the race. It was very reminiscent of that for me, where you just had this bizarre scenario. And Hamilton must have been looking in his mirrors thinking, I'm literally the only one on the grid. This is ridiculous. This is so weird. But yeah, just every part of the race. Obviously, a big mistake at the start of the race from Bottas, locking up. Few people have said that he got kind of pincered at the start, which takes the aero away from the car.
Yeah, I'm not buying that myself.
Kind of, you know, yeah, I mean, at that level, you should know that that's how it works, and he should have, you know, kind of been expecting that. Once he got pincered, he should have, you know, sort of been expecting it, but it felt very clumsy, didn't it? And it was, at that point, it was a shame, because that was going to be a cracking race, and obviously Lando got a really good start, and there was a few cars that got a really good start, and at that point, Max was in a great position, Lando was in a great position. Obviously, he wiped all of them out. He wiped Sergio out as well. So it was, in that sense, a real shame, because then Hamilton kind of drove off, and I thought, oh, here we go. Like, all the contenders are out of it now, and Hamilton's just going to run away with it, and it's going to be a really boring race. Didn't turn out that way. But yeah, so a sad start, but for me, a very clumsy start for Bottas, and he was obviously at fault for that. I believe he's got a penalty, hasn't he, for the next race as well for that?
Yeah, he's got a 5-place grid penalty for Belgium, which is not good for him. There was a rumour going around this morning that they might switch him out with George Russell, because it's the driver that gets the penalty and not the car. So if they're going for maximum points, they could put Russell in the Mercedes and put poor old Bottas in the Williams for just one race. I can't see that happening at all. But of course, yeah, you know, Bottas's future is up in the air a little bit. I think it's likely that that may have sealed his fate, because whilst it helped Mercedes out in the championship fight, it's not what anyone wants to see, because they want to see racing. We want to see the title rivals being able to race each other properly, wheel for wheel. We don't want, you know, Hamilton's teammate to spoil the fun into turn one. So it's going to be quite interesting. I think Bottas, and I've said it many times before, I think he can be great in a one-lap qualification battle. Brilliant. But his racecraft is all over the place and has been for many, many years. He's not a great overtaker. He's not a great defender in the thick of battle. And, you know, to misjudge things as much as he did at the start just reeks of inexperience. But, of course, he's very experienced. So it's just a total failure on his part to control that car. All right, the conditions were difficult, but he'd had a parade lap to get used to those difficult conditions. And of course, these are world-class drivers. He should have done better.
Yeah, and I think you do see he's a good example of a driver that when his luck is down and when his confidence is down, it spirals and he gets worse and worse and worse. He's one of those drivers. Some drivers deal with it and cope with it a lot better than others. And for me, when his confidence is on its floor, on the floor, like it is at the moment, I just think he gets worse by the race, and he almost needs a really good result to kind of bring him back out of it again. But yeah, and like when they interviewed him at the end of the race, he was very down. And I think the interviewer said, you know, everyone's blaming you. And he was like, well, yeah, I kind of see why. And he just took it on the chin and kind of, but he felt very, you know, deflated and very disheartened. I know he would, because that was the end of his race and that was the end of a lot of people's races. But just a very, very bizarre start from Bottas. And like you say, at that level, you know, he should know what he's doing. But for me, you know, taking out Verstappen, was on, he was very, what's the word, like edgy all weekend, wasn't he? He had a few arguments with journalists about, you know, stop asking me about the last crash, the last race is gone, it's done. And he was very argumentative and angry and snappy at a lot of people. And I thought that's going to go one of two ways. He's either going to use that in the race and be absolutely mighty, or it's going to go against him and he's going to make some mistakes because he's, you know, on edge and very edgy. But we didn't even really get to see that because his car was ruined after the accident with Bottas. And if you've seen the photos of that car afterwards, yeah, literally half the car was missing, wasn't it? It's incredible he managed to do what he did with it.
Yeah, how he managed to even complete a lap under racing conditions is just amazing when you consider the amount of downforce that the barge boards and the whole of the floor on the left-hand side, it was all missing. It was incredible. That was a feat in itself. And of course, across the race, there were lots of different amazing feats going on. Let's go back to talking about the restart after the red flag. Now, Lewis was the only person on the main grid who took the restart. Everyone else went into the pits to change tyres. Now, someone pointed this out, that Lewis has the first pit box. So when they finished the parade lap for the restart, if Lewis had gone into the pits, he would have been the first to reach his pit box. But then, once they changed the tyres, they would have held him until the entire field had gone past to reach their pit boxes. So the best thing for him to have done was to stay out on the main track, go round once and change for tyres at the end of the first lap, if that makes any sense. So I can see the reasoning for that. I can see why they did it. Otherwise, he would have just been held up, probably even worse, in the pit lane by the other 19 cars going past. So I think the reason for that is quite apparent. But then when it restarted, you know, we got to see the masterclass from Lewis that we've seen many times. I mean, difficult to overtake. The battles he had up and down the field were just amazing. And it, you know, real character coming out from all of the drivers, I thought.
Yeah, a lot of frustration on the radio. And we have to talk about the Hamilton versus Alonso battle, because that was some of the greatest driving I've seen in a long time. Alonso defending was just incredible. And when you're watching that footage on board, on Hamilton's car, but the balls on both of them, like the moves that Hamilton was trying to make and the moves that Alonso was making to counter and defend that, just both incredible. And how they didn't touch, I'll never know. And just an absolute masterclass of defensive driving by Alonso. It's taken him a few races to warm up, but, you know, he's just turned 40 and he is still completely on it. And you could almost tell that, you know, because a few people were saying, you know, Alonso's going to be upset that his teammate's winning the race here. But I got the impression that he was buzzing for his teammate to win. And I think he was happy for him. But I think he was just on cloud nine because he was like, look, I didn't win the race. I came fourth with the penalties at the end. But look what I did and look how I drove. And I think, you know, a lot of people were talking about his race and his drive. And you could just tell he was on cloud nine. He was absolutely buzzing. He still loves to race, doesn't he?
Yeah, and I thought what was lovely, up and down the field, actually, gestures from teammates. You know, Alonso waited when he got out of his car at the end of the race, waited patiently for Ocon to say his congratulations to his teammates and his crew, and waited there till he could give him a massive hug and lift him up in the air. And I just thought you could tell he was absolutely made up that Ocon had got his first Formula One win. I mean, don't forget, Alonso's won the World Championship twice. So if he won it, then it would have been great, but it wouldn't have been a first, and it was for Ocon. So I think he was really made up. And the other one that blew me away, and you made a comment about this maybe being related to the Bottas being replaced story, is George Russell, when he got on the radio and he said, listen, if Nicholas, if you need to compromise my race for Nicholas's, then do it. You know, and you have a theory about that, don't you?
Well, the way he said that, I thought that to me reeks of, I've signed for Mercedes next year. I'm sorted. I'm happy. Whatever happens now, I'm having a great career from here on in because I'm in the Mercedes next year. I love this team. I love these people. Let's try and get you guys some points. That's what it kind of felt like to me. It felt very selfless, but it was almost like, you know, he's confident in the knowledge that he's moving on next year. So he wanted to help the team on his way out and give them some points, which is a really, really nice thing to do. And he knew at that point that Latifi was in a better position. So it just, I don't know, you know, Formula One drivers are inherently selfish. I think you've got to be a little bit selfish to win the world championship. And I think when you hear and see things like that, as lovely as it is, you think there's got to be, he's confident there somewhere that something else is sorted. Do you know what I mean? So that was kind of my thought on that, that maybe he is sorted for Mercedes next year. And he just wanted the Williams boys to get some points on the way out. Maybe so, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. The other driver I think is worth talking about is Sebastian Vettel, who had a great race. I thought some of the moves he was trying to make on Ocon at times were just fantastic. And again, it was like, I'm a former world champion. You know, I've got the pedigree and the experience to be able to get a move done. In the end, he couldn't, and Ocon won the race. And then we had all the drama after the podium celebrations that he's been disqualified. Now, this has been a long-standing rule in Formula One. The FIA can demand a sample of fuel after the race, and they do randomly with different cars each weekend. Your car has to finish with at least 1 litre of fuel on board so they can take samples and send them off for testing to make sure that your fuel is legal, that you're not adding any additives to it, and all that sort of stuff. Now, they tried to do this with Vettel's car, and they couldn't get a litre's worth of fuel out of the thing, which would suggest that he'd burnt his fuel up too much during the race, or they'd miscalculated how much fuel he would need to get to the end. And these things happen. And that's definitely the sort of time when they would step in and say, right, you're disqualified. But that actually, Aston Martin have now appealed it, and they've said, no, there's something going on here with the fuel pump. The fuel pump, when we shut the car down, is supposed to put the fuel back into other parts of the car. It clearly hasn't. It's retained it in the pump, and that's not our fault. It's just a manufacturer's issue. So that's what they're appealing. So it could still be overturned, but at the moment, Seb's lost that place. And I thought it was nice of Hamilton to issue a statement saying he really enjoyed racing with him and he was gutted that he'd lost the podium position.
Yeah, I mean, Seb has been tremendous this year. It's almost like someone's flicked a switch in him since he left for Ferrari. And he's just a new driver this year. And again, it's the confidence thing. He just seems happier. He just seems more relaxed. He seems more at ease. He's making political statements, and he's wearing those. He wore the T-shirt, the LGBT T-shirt. And he said, you know, I'd do it again tomorrow if they take the place off me, or if they fine me. Doesn't matter. I'll do it again tomorrow. And he's just in a really nice, confident space at the moment. He was picking up the rubbish, wasn't he, at Silverstone. And he's just doing some really, really amazing things. And, you know, a guy that is worth that sort of money, that is as famous as he is, doesn't have to do any of those things. And he wants to do those things. That's what's beautiful about it. But he's, it's just, I don't know, there's something about Seb this year that's just taken him, for me, to the next notch in niceness. And I've got even more respect for him. I always loved him. He's always had that kind of British sense of humor, and I've always rated him as a driver. And there's been a few times in the past where something's happened and it's been a bit like, oh, come on, Seb, you didn't need to do that. But I think that was, looking back, I think a bit of immaturity. And I think he's grown up a bit now. He's had his own kids. He's got his own family, and he's just become this amazing guy that is just doing so many nice things for so many good people. And it's lovely to see. I'm buzzing for him.
Yeah, I think the FIA's decision to reprimand the drivers for wearing the LGBT T-shirts at the start of the race, they said that they didn't take them off for the national anthem, which was disrespectful. Well, it's not. I don't think it's got anything to do with the disrespect. It's the fact that Hungary have policies against LGBT communities. So the fact that they left them on was a bit of a protest, and the FIA reprimanding them for that makes the FIA look not with it, if you know what I mean. So yeah, I thought totally. That was a bizarre way to start the race weekend, to be honest. And of course, you know, Seb has got this new lease of life, as you say. And he just seems, I've always thought he was personable. I've always liked his sense of humor. We both have. We've always said that. But he just seems even more nice now, if that could, you know, be a thing.
Yeah, he's one of the drivers you love to go for a drink with. You just look at, you know, you go up and down that pit lane. Lando is one of them. Ricardo is one of them. George Russell's one of them. And he's definitely one of them. You'd like to go out drinking with Kimi, maybe, but you'd quite like Kimi to have a few drinks and loosen up a bit first, because he might be a bit serious at the start. But after that, I think you'd be in for one hell of an evening if you went out with Kimi. But no, he's one of those guys you'd love to have a drink with. And yeah, just it's just so nice to see so many nice, friendly personality drivers. You know, we've had a few spells in Formula One in the past where there's been a lot of robotic drivers that, you know, just turn up at the PR things. They've got no personality, nothing to say for themselves. But then we're in this lovely period at the moment where we've got some great personalities in the sport.
Yep. So looking at the news since the race, Valtteri Bottas has apologised to all the drivers he took out in a crash. Lance Stroll has issued an apology. He went into Charles Leclerc on the lap one instance, if you remember. He's also been fined 5 grid places for the Belgian Grand Prix in Spa. Formula One starts its summer break now, so about 4 weeks to go until we next get racing. And it also means Lewis Hamilton goes into that summer break leading the Drivers' Championship. I saw an interesting statistic from the 2016 season. Lewis Hamilton was about the same amount of points ahead at this point of the 26th season than Nico Rosberg. And, of course, Rosberg went on to win the Drivers' Championship, so there could be an omen there. I think it'll be interesting to find out from Nicky now some of the stats from Hungary because, I mean, when was the last time can you think of just one car starting doing a grid start in Formula One? I can't think it's ever happened, ever. So let's get some stats from Nicky and find out what he's been delving into over the Hungarian Grand Prix weekend.
Ocon takes his maiden win, Williams score for the first time in 2 years, and two drivers over the age of 40 score points. Here are the top statistics from the 2021 Hungarian Grand Prix. Esteban Ocon became the 111th and latest different driver to win a World Championship Formula One race. He's the fifth different driver to take his maiden win at the Hungaroring. Prior to Sunday, Ocon had scored only once previously at the circuit, with a ninth place finish in 2017. Ocon recorded the first victory for Alpine and Team Enstone's first win since Kimi Raikkonen was victorious at the 2013 Australian Grand Prix. It was the team's first win in Hungary since Fernando Alonso's victory for Renault in 2003. Ocon is also the first driver to win from 8th on the grid since Alonso at the 2012 Malaysian Grand Prix, and is the first French driver to win with a French team using a French engine since Alain Prost, who won for Renault at the 1983 Austrian Grand Prix. For the first time since 2017, Lewis Hamilton failed to win the Hungarian Grand Prix. Nevertheless, he became the first driver to record 10 podiums at the Hungaroring, as well as the third driver to have reached the chequered flag on 250 occasions. Hamilton's podium means that Mercedes are the fourth team to reach 250 top three finishes in Formula One. Mercedes are the first team to achieve the feat since Williams at the 2000 Belgian Grand Prix. Both of the Red Bull Junior team's drivers scored points at the Hungarian Grand Prix for the first time since 2011. Every time Pierre Gasly has finished in Hungary, he's finished on the road in 6th place. Meanwhile, Yuki Tsunoda equaled his best result in Formula 1 with 7th place. Those positions will become 5th and 6th if Vettel's disqualification stands, which would make this the first time since the 2019 German Grand Prix that both of the Red Bull Junior team's drivers have finished in the top 6. 6th place for Tsunoda would also be the best result for a Japanese driver in Formula 1 since Kamui Kobayashi's 6th place at the 2012 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. It was a great day for Williams at the Hungarian Grand Prix, who scored points with both cars. It was the first time that the team have picked up points since Robert Kubica scored at the 2019 German Grand Prix, the first time that both Williams cars have finished in the points since the 2018 Italian Grand Prix, and the first time both Williams drivers have scored in Hungary since 2014. Williams have scored more points over the last two race weekends than Red Bull. The team also scored more points at the Hungarian Grand Prix than they did in the last three seasons combined. While George Russell scored the first points for a driver starting 17th on the grid since Sergio Perez at the 2020 Styrian Grand Prix, Nicholas Latifi became the first driver to score points at the Hungarian Grand Prix, having started 18th on the grid. Latifi's 7th place equals the best ever result from the 18th grid slot at the Hungaroring. Martin Donnelly also finished 7th for Lotus at the 1990 Hungarian Grand Prix. And finally, Kimi Raikkonen finished on the road in 11th place, but he'll be promoted into the points if Vettel's disqualification stands. With both Fernando Alonso and Raikkonen potentially scoring, this could be the first race in which two drivers over the age of 40 have scored in over 50 years. Jack Brabham and Graham Hill both scored points over the age of 40 at the 1970 British Grand Prix.
Nice one, Nicky. You can, of course, follow him across the race weekends. There's always some amazing stacks and facts and stats and facts. I don't know about stats and facts. He's got stats. I don't know if he's got stats. It's like I've had a drink while he was talking there, isn't it? But I can assure you I haven't. But yeah, follow him at Lights Out. The stat you were talking about before as well, by the way, I think the points that if Vettel isn't disqualified, I think Hamilton is on exactly the points he was on in 2016 at the halfway point, and Verstappen is on exactly the points Rosberg was on at the halfway point if Vettel wasn't eliminated, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it would be identical. So that's basically the stat you was referring to before, is like it's literally to the point at the Hungarian Grand Prix at this point in the season. So is that an omen? Are we going to have a new world champion at the end of the year? Is Hamilton going to get his eighth, or is Verstappen going to get his first? The second half of this season is going to be brilliant. And what I did like to see as well, Red Bull at the end, as Christian Horner was kind of alluding to, right, let's put all that behind us now. That's done. It's the halfway point. We're going to have a rest. We're going to have a break, and we're going to come back and we're going to smash the second half of the season. And that to me is the right attitude. You've got to put all this behind you now and go, right, let's just concentrate on the second half, almost like it's its own year of Formula One. Smash it, get in there, get going. And I think they will. I think Red Bull will come back fighting. They'll win the next race maybe, and then we'll be back on again and it'll all be very exciting. But the second half of this season is going to be great.
It is, and I think the next track is going to be really telling, because without a doubt, Mercedes have closed the gap in performance on Red Bull as the season's gone on. And you go to Spa, which is all about high-speed straights and high-speed corners and a couple of low-speed ones too, but, you know, it's a fast, long circuit. I think it's going to be amazing. That race is here in around about 4 weeks, right at the end of August, which means me and Scott, as the two soft compounds, are taking our summer break. Where are you going?
I'm going to go to the living room because I've spent enough time in the bedroom and it's a short flight to the living room. So I'm going to fly to the living room and just spend 3 weeks there, I think.
I thought I might go to Tallaght or Rhyl. We'll be back in 3 weeks then to preview the Belgium Grand Prix. We're at the halfway point of this year's exciting Formula One season. Thanks for sticking with Two Soft Compounds. We'll see you next time.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.